This week's episode of Hype is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/hype. Welcome to Hype, episode 23. Marima, Joshua, Kyle, and I all here this week. Hey, guys.
Hey, Andrew.
Hi. Hi. This is probably our earliest recording ever at 5:30 in the morning here on the Pacific Coast.
And, yay.
But not for Marima, where it's what time?
12:30 in the morning.
Damn Australia. Win. Polar opposites.
12:30 tomorrow.
Right.
Yep.
What is the future like in tandem?
It's dark. It's pretty dark in the future.
What does J.K. Rowling say in Wonderland magazine? We're all dying to know.
I'll let you guys know on the 7th.
Well, let's talk about that. That's the big news that rocked the fandom this past week. Over the weekend, the Sunday Times posted a preview of Emma Watson's interview with J.K. Rowling in Wonderland magazine, because Emma is the guest editor for this bi-monthly publication, and Hypeable picked up all the viral traffic. Literally everybody on the internet, I think, went to Hypeable for this story, and because we published it before the Sunday Times published it, because I had seen the quotes on their Twitter when they previewed the front page in a graphic. So there's lots of controversy surrounding this story. So we'll take it one step at a time. First, here's what we know. J.K. Rowling is quoted as saying she wrote the Hermione-Ron relationship as a form of wish fulfillment. That's how it was conceived, really. For reasons that have very little to do with literature and far more to do with me clinging to the plot as I first imagined it, Hermione ended up with Ron. I know, I'm sorry, she continued. I can hear the rage and fury it might cause some fans, but if I'm absolutely honest, distance has given me perspective on that. It was a choice I made for very personal reasons, not for reasons of credibility. Am I breaking people's hearts by saying this? I hope not. This was all under a headline on the Sunday Times that reads, J.K. admits Hermione should have wed Harry. However, there is no quote in this article from J.K. Rowling saying that Harry and Hermione should have wed. So we're waiting for the full interview, for the truth, for the answers. Obviously, this upset a lot of people because Ron and Hermione have been together for all this time, and for J.K. Rowling years later to suddenly say, oh, you know what? That wasn't right. It's crazy. Marima, what were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, this is dumb. So, yeah, this is really dumb. The funniest thing about it, I think, for me is the way she says, like, it was me clinging to the plot and it's kind of wish fulfillment and stuff, as if she isn't the person that decides those things. like there isn't an objective way that Harry Potter should have been written. You know what I'm saying? So the way that she's like, oh yeah, I did it wrong. Like, oh, I didn't really do it, you know, how it should have been done, just feels so strange to me, because like, you're the author. You can do what you want. It's okay. And, I think, yeah, obviously there has been much fury on the internet based on these statements, and it kind of makes me shudder to think what else could be in this interview.
Is she right, exactly. Is she saying that in when she started the series, she said, okay, by the end of this, Ron and Hermione are going to end up together. Then as she was writing, as she progressed, she realized that it actually should have been Harry and Hermione.
Yeah,
that's
I think,
what it sounds like.
Well, I don't know if she's saying it should have been Harry and Hermione, but she's definitely saying, I think, that, yeah, like when she started working out the plot and I guess just working out the different stages of development, she knew, like, okay, Hermione and Ron, that's the end point. And maybe, yeah, at some point during the writing, she thought, actually, you know, would this work? And, but I mean, she wrote the books for it to work. So yeah, it works in the book. I don't really understand the issue here. Although obviously people that are fans of Harry and Hermione got very excited and see this as a win, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people who are supporters of Ron and Hermione are saying, well, that makes no sense because in the books, it all leads to Ron and Hermione ending up together, which is true because J.K. Rowling says herself, I did write it that way.
Yeah, that's why it's so funny.
Right.
It doesn't really make any sense.
Right. Rowling is confusing people by saying this because it just doesn't, she's just speaking outside of the canon. It's, which is throwing a lot of people off, I think.
I think maybe she saw Hermione differently prior to her growing up. And so whenever she found, you know, middle of the way, she felt like, oh, maybe Ron wouldn't be with her because of the kind of the way she is. And so I feel like she, like you said, she wrote it the way she wrote it. But I could see where you could be like, well, I kind of wrote, you know, myself into a corner and I might as well, continue it because I've already laid out the groundwork. But I could see her changing her mind, you know, three books in.
It's just not right. She's got to stick with it. And this is like the ultimate bomb she could have dropped too.
She did stick with it though. So that's the thing is like, even though she said it, she still stuck with, you know, what everyone loves.
Yeah. Well, let's answer that question. So what are we supposed to do with this information?
Ignore it.
Just completely ignore it.
But it's hard to when it comes from the author.
Well, like John Green tweeted something amazing when this news broke out, and he was just like, books belong to their readers. And like, I like that quote a lot because it just goes to show that even if she drops all this information that like changes how we think about it, it's like up to how we read it and not how we interpret it.
Yeah, because the problem is that it's not like books belong to their readers because this isn't canon information as far as I'm concerned, because she's not saying, oh, you know, what happened in the books, it actually happened this way. She's saying, oh, in hindsight, this was a poor choice. And so for a lot of readers, it's so upsetting, I think, because it delegitimizes this relationship that to them was so important and did make, like, it was, I think, probably the prime relationship in Harry Potter. But, like, there's the one we definitely saw grow the most because Harry and Ginny was like an afterthought, really, at the end. So that's why I think it is so upsetting. But as far as I'm concerned with the canon, it doesn't change anything. It's not like Dumbledore being gay. It's not an additional piece of information. It's maybe a quote that she shouldn't have said in an interview.
One thing that is kind of bothering me is that some people are saying, oh, well, you know, we don't know if she really said. We don't know what she really said. But it's like, if you look at the context clues here, she is apologizing for something in her interview with Emma Watson related to Ron Hermione. And she's talking about the Hermione Ron relationship being wish fulfillment. She has definitely had a change of heart about Ron Hermione. I don't think there's any doubting that. The big question right now is, did she say that Harry should have married Hermione? And the world is going to be rocked when we hear the truth.
Watch, she's just going to be like, oh, by the way, Harry and Hermione got married after Ron and Hermione divorced. Just saying.
Yeah.
Like, she's going to throw some.
What, and Harry and Ginny get divorced as well?
That'll be awkward. Oh, God.
They never belong together.
Harry just cheats on Ginny.
Harry cheats on Ginny.
God.
Isn't that what Stephen Colbert said?
Yep, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's book 8.
So we did.
They even had some cover art with Ron and like couples therapy or something.
Yeah, it looked good
great.
Too.
It did. It looked great.
We did
It was like Ron in the apartment.
Yeah,
like,
the studio apartment of shame.
Yeah.
We did a couple spin-off articles in light of this news. We did dueling columns. I did in support of Ron and Hermione. Kyle did in support of Harry and Hermione. And Marima did in support of Hermione, which that one did the best. So congrats, Marima.
Well, it's unsurprising, really.
No, it's not. But we should have thought to do that from the beginning.
Team Hermione.
But I'm always thinking about how can we get the most page views.
Well, we got 3 times, so it's all good.
Yeah, it was good. It's a nice little roundup of articles with opposing opinions. And yeah, so the magazine is going to be released on Friday. Maybe we'll get a preview tomorrow, Thursday, but who knows? We have one of our writers in Hypeable. She's already pre-ordered the magazine at her local store. She's ready to go and grab it and get the truth. The truth will be out there soon. I can't wait. And hopefully she drops some other bombshells. Yeah. We're going to continue with the news in just a moment. We've got lots to talk about. But today's podcast, it's time to remind you, is brought to you by Audible.com. They are the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of Hype, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their great service. Today, we are recommending Looking for Alaska by John Green. This is the second John Green book that I'm reading. Of course, the first one was Fault in Our Stars. I'm currently going through Looking for Alaska right now. I just hit the middle point, and if you've read this book, you know what happens there. Man, is it a surprise. It is a great book. This is, for a lot of people, this is their favorite John Green book. Yes, even better than The Fault in Our Stars. Me personally, I think Fault in Our Stars is going to sit in the number one spot, and Looking for Alaska will sit in the number two spot. No matter whether or not you think it's your favorite John Green book, it's definitely worth a read. Everybody will recommend this one. And why not listen to it instead of reading it? Maybe here in America right now, it's cold pretty much everywhere. While you're going around town all bundled up, you don't want to have a book out while you're bouncing all over the place. Just have it right there in your ears. You already got your headphones in. Now you can listen to a book. And it's such a unique and just comfortable, pleasant experience when you listen to an audiobook. Audiblepodcast.com/hype. Get Looking for Alaska for free. Or any John Green book. I see the other ones right here. Will Grayson, Fault in Our Stars, An Abundance of Catherines, Paper Towns. They're all here. Right next to these books, they recommend The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Audible is smart. They know the audience. Audiblepodcast.com/hype. Get an audiobook for free. And we thank Audible for their support of the show. The Fault in Our Stars trailer was released back in the end of January. It was supposed to be released on Valentine's Day. And then the trailer leaked somehow. And they decided to move the release date up to January 29th, and it was really good, right?
It was, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic.
I think it's fair to say now everybody's concerns about the marketing and the cannulas, that, all that stuff. Cannulas are now...
Cannula.
Did yeah. we do the pronunciation on this show? With Google? Yeah.
Yeah, you just throw it to me when you're not sure.
Thank you. The cannulas... that's all water under the bridge now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that little pre-story. Excuse me.
Yeah. So, I don't know. How should we talk about this? It was really loyal to the book. We did an article, a list of things, a list of quotes in the book that basically made it into the movie. Some of them are direct quotes. Some of them are slightly adjusted, but for a book to film adaptation, so far it looks really accurate. I mean, there's things down to particular descriptions from John Green that were carried over into the movie, like when Augustus in chapter 5 is waiting for Hazel when she pulls into the driveway. He's holding a bouquet of bright orange tulips just beginning to blossom and wearing an Indiana Pacers jersey. That's exactly what you see in the movie. That was a description from the book carried exactly into the movie. People are analyzing the swing set scene, how Gus is wearing red and the swing set is red. No spoilers, but you know what I mean there?
Okay.
It could be. What was your favorite scene, Kyle?
Oh, I don't know. I think the Amsterdam scene. Definitely.
Like the dinner scene?
No, the attic scene when they make out. Oh, was great. That sounds so creepy. God, but
how about you, Marima?
I don't know. I don't think I'm as big a Fault in Our Stars fan as you guys are.
What?
But I know.
No, you're not allowed to think that.
I'll get just out. Fire myself, shall I? I liked it in general. Like, I thought, obviously I've read the book, and you're right, it was a really loyal adaptation. And I think if you're a fan of the book, you're going to really love this film based on what we have seen. And if you didn't really like the book, you're probably not really going to like the film, because it looks like it's going to be very similar.
But who didn't like the book? Everybody liked the book.
Uh-huh.
Except you. What do you like? What was your favorite, Josh?
I think I really liked where she talks about being a time bomb. I just thought that it's just such an important point, because it's so true. You know, just so something you don't really. I like that it's original. You know what I mean? Like, a ticking time bomb is an original phrase, but to say it about a sickness, I feel like it's an interesting take on things.
And that actually, is the moment that really swings the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, I think what I like the most about this is that, like they did with the book publicity, and we talked about this a bit on Book Hype, but that they're not giving away the ending of it, which is like quite a big shock in the book. And I like that.
Which I think is good.
Yeah, I think it's really good, because they could have very easily made it more about that, but instead they're sticking with, kind of how the book was marketed, which I think is a good move.
Yeah, I mean, if they ruin the end, that would be pretty lame.
Yeah, but you know how sometimes, like, they make it so obvious with the marketing, like when they're hinting towards the things, and, you know, you just know.
Yeah.
Whereas I think in this, they've done a really good job, because even there are a couple scenes where it's definitely, like, post-funeral, and, you just have no idea that that's what it is.
Right.
Like, you can tell if you've read the book, because they're wearing black, but that aside.
Right. And that's probably why I've seen people say that so far. They've been saying, like, is this hinting about what happens at the end, or is it just because I've read it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was good. What was your favorite scene, Andrew?
Oh, every moment of it. Just the whole thing was perfect. Mm-hmm. No, actually, my favorite scene was Amsterdam, the dinner scene, when Gus is saying how much he's in love with Hazel. That was so sweet.
Oh,
chapter
10. Do you just want Ansel Elgort to say that to you?
Yes.
He's like so dreamy.
Yes, that's why it gets me.
Did you guys like the actors?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a good job. Great job.
They seem perfect to me so far.
Yeah.
I want to see more of
Shailene seemed good.
Yeah, and I want to see more of Nat Wolff, because I think he's really great as Isaac.
Yeah, egg scene was funny.
Yeah, that would be great.
But it looks like I'm pleasantly surprised by Ansel Elgort so far. Just considering before this movie and before Divergent, we didn't really know him at all. He was also in an adaptation of Carrie recently. I don't know.
Carrie was all right.
Did he do good?
He did good. Yeah, he did a good job.
It was also great seeing Laura Dern playing Hazel's mother. She was very Laura Dern in the scene that she speaks in this movie. Make some friends. It's like, if you've seen her movies, that's very her. Or Enlighten that.
She's always kind of crazy.
Yeah. And Sam Trammell, who plays Hazel's dad. He's best known for True Blood. He was in it as well. Another surprising thing to me about this is that the trailer has had 9.5 million views on YouTube. I think, isn't that a unique number of views?
In terms of it's more than you thought?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I feel like they really did a good job not just catering to the readers. And I think this, as opposed to almost other, like any other, you know, YA novel, is gonna do well with everyone. You know what I mean? I just felt like it was aimed towards everyone instead of just picking out the book's audience. And that's probably why it's doing so well.
Every headline you read online, not Hypables, but every headline I saw was Fault in Our Stars trailer is here, and it's going to make you cry. Or bring out the tissues. Everybody was selling it to their readers as this is a really emotional trailer. I don't know if that was part of the success of it, because people wanted to see a really emotional trailer. But 9.5 million views for a one-off Book the Film adaptation seems pretty...
And not like a huge budget. I mean, this film doesn't have a huge budget.
Right. It just seems really big to me, and I think this is a very good sign for how it does in theaters. I was thinking... I was talking with my friend about this. We were considering how well The Perks of Being a Wallflower did. That's another, you know, it's a one-off book, Stephen Chbosky. It got great reviews. It was a great movie, great book. It only made $17.7 million here in the U.S., $33 million worldwide. I think The Fault in Our Stars is going to do better than that.
I do, too. The first thing I thought was that it was going to do better than Perks.
But it'll have a wider release, won't it? Because Perks was so hard to find in the cinema.
Oh.
Just in general.
I don't know how easy or hard it was here.
It'll be about the same. I mean, they're very similar in terms of their budget. So it may be, they may have a little bit more just because Shailene's part of another franchise.
But, yeah.
I mean, the other one had Emma, so...
I'm looking at...
that's why I thought it was weird that they marketed Perks as this like little indie film when it had Emma Watson in it. Whereas I feel like this has had a bigger, more mainstream push, but I don't know. That might
well,
just be me.
John Green is certainly more mainstream. Well, okay, I see what you're saying. Emma Watson's mainstream too.
Yeah.
I guess Perks just had the feel of kind of an indie
film. Yeah, it did. Indie film.
It was Summit too, and they're not a huge studio.
But maybe, like, it did, you know, it was well received at least. So maybe studios are more comfortable pushing a contemporary young adult film now that they know, well, it can work.
Yes.
Like Perks was kind of the, because then Spectacular Now, that came out after Perks, didn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. So that was kind of the first one of this new range that wasn't dystopian.
Yeah, you're right.
Perks of Being a Wallflower got 5.5 million views on YouTube. Not that that's an indicator of success, but. Just interesting
still,
for comparison's
quite a
sake.
Bit. Especially for, you know, Emma being in it.
Yeah. I mean, could 5.5 million, I mean, that's, so less people who saw the trailer saw it in theaters. If every one of those views equaled a movie ticket, that would
that's not a good sign.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So the Fault in Our Stars trailer has gotten 9.4 million views, but that's because you can watch it for free in 2.5 minutes in the comfort of your own home.
Well, but also something else with Fault in Our Stars is they have obviously made an effort to get the international release dates to sync up a bit more. Like Perks, I had to wait about over 6 months, I think, from when it came out in the States to here, whereas it comes out on the same day Fault in Our Stars does.
Oh, that's good.
So,
that's good.
You know, obviously if there's a huge delay, people are more likely to legally watch it in the time.
I think they also recognize that the Fault in Our Stars has a worldwide audience, a passionate... John Green has a passionate following, whereas Stephen Chbosky did not have that passionate following.
That's true.
Yeah, it was more of an American novel.
Yeah, and like Emma Watson's a big star and everything, but are people like diehard Emma Watson fans? Like, oh my God, new Emma Watson movie.
Josh is.
But you know, like people get really excited about a new John Green book, even if they don't know what it's about.
Yeah.
They don't get excited about a new Emma Watson movie.
Yeah. But more studios are paying more closer attention to international markets anyway, just in general, just because like Marvel's been doing really well in China and whatnot, and so I'm sure we're just going to see, like Marima said, the dates will get closer and closer, probably because they don't want people spoiling the films for each other.
I'm very pro that happening.
Yeah, it should.
Let's talk about another book to film adaptation, Divergence, coming up, and we got the new trailer on Tuesday. It is the third and final trailer for Divergent. This one is actually my favorite. This is something I think we've talked about on Hype before. It's a bit of a complicated story, at least the way that they've been marketing it. They've been talking about the factions and introducing these various different characters. This trailer, and I was reading the comments, I'm glad people agree, it's simple. There's a clear message, a simple message that people can understand whether or not you've read the books. And that's important because these people who haven't read the books, they may watch one of these trailers that are a little bit more complicated and they're like, what is all this? This is too much information and these factions and all this stuff. Whereas they kept this one really simple. Do you guys agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They did a fantastic job at making everything crystal clear. Like, you can't get more crystal clear than Shailene Woodley going, after the war, they split our society into 5 different factions because they thought we would survive. Like, I mean, it just works really good.
Wait, what are factions? Yeah, like at the beginning here, you get a shot of the different factions like entering some building. I don't know what it is exactly. It was also short on introducing new characters. You see Triss for Jeannie and Tori. And that's it. I mean, you get clips of the Pryor family, but nobody else talks except for those four, I think.
Is this the first time Ashley Judd's been in the one of the trailers?
Who does she play again?
Her mom.
Oh, maybe.
No, she was no.
Yeah,
the
she
last
had
couple.
Like a brief. She said, "Are you scared?" or something in one of the last ones.
I must have dismissed it.
Yeah, well, they weren't very good, so I don't blame you. This was really good, though.
Yeah.
This is the trailer they should have done at the start, and I'm curious if they cut it in response to what happened when they released the other trailers where people were like, what is this movie about? What is happening? Because this was great.
You know, it's like
this
their worst nightmares whenever that happened originally.
Yeah.
It's like, no. Well,
yeah, this should have been the first one they released.
Summit really wants this to be their next big... They want this to be their next Hunger Games. And we've also seen stuff like they've released infographics explaining the factions. But I think that's probably a mistake. Just don't do any of that. Just market a simple message. Don't try to educate people before going into this. Just get them intrigued by the simple message and then let them come in and see it.
Yeah.
If you look at the still of the YouTube video, like when you go to our website, it looks like Theo James is balding and you can't see any of his hair on the top of his head.
I'm sorry.
I thought the guns looked so cheap.
Yeah. I was trying to find a still from the actual trailer.
Oh, no, not the
hard.
Not the feature image, but like the actual still image from the clip.
Oh, I see. Clip. Well, we know he's not bald because he's perfect. Yeah. So stop that.
Are they meant to be paintball guns?
I swear they look like paintball guns.
Maybe they had to use paintball guns to avoid an R rating.
Or to afford it in their budget.
Yeah.
How about Theo is 4? I see a comment here. It's got a lot of likes on it. Zach says that based on everything he's seen, Theo is not 4.
Yes, exactly. I agree. I hate Theo James is 4. I hate it. No.
I just don't think he's a very good actor. He's very attractive, so that's fine.
Yeah, he's hunky, but he's not 4.
I mean, I don't have a particular image of 4 in my head, but I just, every time he says anything, it just feels so clunky.
It does. It sounds weird.
Yeah, right? It feels like someone's acting. And I think because Shailene Woodley is very, I think she's good in this. I like her a lot as Triss.
Maybe it's his accent.
Yeah, it feels weird.
I have a confession to make. I have not read Allegiant yet.
Well, you don't need to. I spoiled you immediately after I read it.
That's the thing. I started reading it and then I got spoiled. And it wasn't even by you, Marima. I had read
I'm sure it was on Twitter.
Comments and
early.
Right. Because the book had leaked and and then I started reading it and I didn't like the going back and forth between Tristan Ford's perspectives, and then there was another book I wanted to read. I can't remember which, so I just stopped, and I haven't picked it up since.
Well, you're not missing out on a huge amount.
Yeah, but I feel like I have to read it at some point, right? If these are all going to be turned into movies.
Well, Allegiant will definitely be split in 2, so you'll have plenty of time. 2 or 3.
Plenty of time
4.
To get the end.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, actually, because there's a new report yesterday. I haven't posted it on Hypeable yet, but the Divergent sequel is set to begin production in May, two months after the release of the first film. Presumably, they're going to be shooting in Chicago again. They still don't have a director, but we did also learn recently that somebody else has been brought on to help with the script. What's his name? Something Goldsman. Oh, Akiva Goldsman. Right? Oh, he's one of the people who is assisting. I don't think that's the person who's taking it over completely. But yeah, so they're supposed to start filming Insurgent in May. And that is assuming that, you know, Divergent's going to be a big hit in March. You may remember that the Mortal Instruments, that movie came out last year. What was it, November? And it didn't do well at the box office. And they had already decided to start filming, like, as soon as the movie came out. Yeah. But then they put it on hold because the original didn't do that well in the box office. And now it's on an indefinite hold. So Divergent AKA has canceled. To do well at the box office for Insurgent to take off. What'd you say, Josh?
No, I agreed. Yeah, I was just agreeing.
So,
not that I don't love this movie or this book, but I have a feeling that it's going to go the same route. I feel like too many people are just not interested enough if they haven't read the books.
Yeah,
but there is a big book audience. I mean, you look at it on the bestseller list, and it continues to sit high on this bestseller list, which is a good sign.
So was Mortal Instruments. Mortal Instruments.
No, it wasn't. Not like this.
Wasn't it?
Mortal Instruments has a huge fan base.
It does.
It's gigantic.
They didn't go and see the film. That's the problem. Yeah. Like, not even the fans went to see the film.
Yeah, the fans had their own problems with the movies.
But the first three books have been sitting at the top of USA Today's bestseller list for weeks, maybe months. I'm talking about Divergent.
Yeah, but that's because Allegiant, like, there was all the stuff with Allegiant and the movie. The new Mortal Instruments is going to come out later this year, and I guarantee when that happens, that series will be right up the top again.
Hmm.
But I think Divergent has the ability to appeal to more people than the Mortal Instruments does, but I do agree that at the moment it's not looking incredibly good for it, because they want it to be like Hunger Games, and I just don't think that's going to happen.
It's just not going to happen. Like, the Hunger Games is big because Jennifer Lawrence is big and because she's won an Oscar, and that brings you a whole new audience that's not just read the book, you know what I mean? And I think that people don't realize that. They think it's just the fans. But really, you know, once you're in the spotlight like Jennifer is, then you have a whole new audience that are going to see your films. And sadly, only book fans aren't going to make a film successful.
I think Shailene Woodley's in the spotlight, isn't she?
No, she's in the spotlight, but she's not. I don't think she has her, you know. I guess I value the Oscars probably more than other people because I write about film, but it brings you a new audience that's not just a young, you know, like up to 18 age range.
Yeah.
And that is a huge audience. Like, I know that they always go for like the 13 to 25 or whatever, but over, you know, 25 and plus still watch films. And there's actually more people in that age range. So,
Yeah, Divergent has some good adult actors, though, like, has Kate Winslet, and I think that brings a lot more interest than, like, Mortal Instruments didn't have actors like that in it.
Yep.
So that certainly will help.
It definitely has a better chance than Mortal Instruments had. That was pretty much dead in the water.
Yeah.
And that was the whole point of bringing Kate Winslet on, right?
Well, exactly. Yeah. To bring some cred, you know, to the film.
And I have to say, though, like, I was at the Divergent panel at Comic-Con, and people did not seem excited. And these were people who had waited to get into Hall H to see the footage.
Oh, no.
Was there a movie coming? Were they screening something after Divergent?
No. They were, like, people had gone there for Divergent and Ender's Game. It was hard to know who was there for which film, because they did a joint panel. But,
yeah,
they didn't seem very excited. So that wasn't a good sign.
Hmm.
It also wasn't full in there, which, again, not a good sign.
Yeah. The story of Divergent, though, is definitely a lot better than Mortal Instruments, and it appeals to more people.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't read Mortal Instruments, but...
I have.
From what okay.
Don't.
Yeah, from what I've heard, it's not...
It's not your thing.
Not my thing.
It wasn't mine either.
Well, you're a trooper. Talk about some other movies now. The Lego Movie 2 is already in the works. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is because the Lego Movie has actually been getting really great reviews, to my surprise.
I'm so excited about the Lego Movie.
Oh, me
so
too.
So stoked. I think I actually might go see that today.
It just seems kind of lame to me. I don't know.
It was really, it looks so funny.
Does yeah. It? It looks yeah. Hysterical.
I love animated movies.
I love Morgan Freeman just in anything too. Mm-hmm. So.
Will Arnett as Batman. That's pretty funny. But yeah, they're already working on it. I saw one review in an ad that was comparing it to Toy Story.
Oh, like, big call.
Oh, yikes.
During the Super Bowl this past Sunday, there were a bunch of movie commercials. Did any stand out to you, Josh, in particular?
Yeah, I think the new Amazing Spider-Man 2 trailer was really good. They released two of them. Basically, one was a 30-second ad that was the second part of a one-minute trailer. And then they released like a almost four-minute trailer that was really good, and people seemed to respond to it well.
And so is that movie going to be good?
The first people like the first one. It did yeah. well, you know, at the box office. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if this did well, because a lot of people were probably skeptical about having a new Spider-Man in the first one. And so now if they liked it, then they'll be into this one more than they were the first one. And Emma Stone has a big audience or, you know, fanship, whatever.
Right.
And the other one was the new Captain America film. A lot of people were talking about that one.
Yeah. I'd say the Muppets trailer was the best one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they are so funny.
That was hysterical.
The commercial, they take tweets. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, they took tweets and read them as reviews.
They claim they're real tweets about
I've
the Muppets.
I've read that they're not.
Well,
sure they're not.
Well, but I looked up...
It wouldn't surprise me if they are.
I looked up the Twitter account of one of them, and it does exist. But there was only like 5 tweets. Mm-hmm. And it made me wonder if Disney just made these accounts in case people do check. Because it seemed weird for them to find these random... These tweets are so random. Like, and for the one account that I looked at, there was 5 tweets spanning like a month or something. It was a bit bizarre.
That might have been my Twitter account.
I'm going to start tweeting about the Muppets in hopes that I get in a commercial.
Right.
Yeah.
You should name
the
your,
best one was
name
that,
your Twitter handle.
The spam. I love, like, I made... $64 an hour worth.
Yeah, I guess that looks good, that movie.
Which?
The Muppets.
Oh yeah. Captain America. That trailer was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Transformers came out too. That was pretty neat. It was Dinobots.
It's
going
to
be terrible, but there was Dinobots.
Kyle likes Transformers.
I love Transformers.
The first
I know,
one
like,
I loved.
Last time we talked about Transformers, y'all were like, oh, Transformers. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just pissed that Shia LaBeouf isn't in this one.
He's too busy plagiarizing the world.
Yeah. He's too busy saying he's not famous anymore.
Yeah, and writing like signs in the sky.
It's Mark Wahlberg now.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, the weirdest thing I've ever seen, or the weirdest casting.
I know.
Transformers.
Is it? I mean, he's an action star, kind of, right?
It's just not right. He doesn't look right anymore, because he just keeps getting bigger, like stronger, but he's still short. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's starting to look like those bodybuilders, no offense to the bodybuilders, but he's just starting to look like one of those guys.
He's like awkwardly proportioned.
Awkwardly proportioned, exactly.
He's wider than he is taller.
Exactly.
There's a guy who was my height at the Apple store, and he felt like he needed to make up for it by building up his muscles. And he was like 3 times like fatter than hamster. I was, and it was all muscle. So I totally know what you mean.
Switching gears for a minute. We lost Philip Seymour Hoffman over the weekend. This happened on Sunday. He was found in his New York City apartment with a needle in his arm. It looks like he was doing heroin. He had allegedly fallen off the wagon again. He was 46 years old. He survived by his girlfriend and 3 children. I know Josh was a big fan of Philip Seymour Hoffman, so you are, of course, very saddened by this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a bummer to lose another, you know, awesome actor to heroin. I mean, it seems like that's always the thing, you know. And this really bummed me out, just because I've I was watching Twister, the tornado movie, the other day, and he plays a small role in that. And he was just so good. And I knew that we had talked about this before, but I knew he had been in rehab, I think early
in or May.
In May. And I thought it was for cocaine use. But obviously that was some. Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought. So that's why I was so surprised. You know, usually you don't do drugs, kids, but usually you don't you don't die from cocaine. So I was surprised to hear that, he had died, but I had read that he had like 50 bags of heroin so obviously it was a major problem that he wasn't getting help for. And, I learned today that they've arrested 4 people that in connection to selling him heroin. So I don't know if that's,
I don't think they arrested them. They're just questioning them.
It says 4 arrests made in connection.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And one of them was actually, he was a musician for a couple big bands.
But like, why are you can't sell it. I was like, why are
they arrested?
Oh, yeah.
They found 350 bags of heroin at the drug dealers.
Okay.
That's why they were arrested.
And like, I think you mentioned, Philip Seymour Hoffman had 50 bags 50, in his.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's crazy.
And I think it's a term people might think, oh, he's got bags of heroin. It's most likely it's small, very small little bags that you buy like on the street. They're not, you know, big.
Yeah.
Whatever they're called. Big bags.
Like Ziploc sandwich.
They're not
bags.
Ziploc bags. Yeah. They're not Ziploc
like, they're
bags.
They're like the sandwich bags that you come in. Like the really
they're
tiny
like
ones.
An inch by inch.
Oh, that
I thought we've talked about small. The size of the bags of heroin.
Well, I didn't want people to think like he's got a, you know, he's not selling drugs.
Like he's
know,
got he, a Santa he sack was, full of heroin.
He was, you know, he had a major problem, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's so
I was
sad.
Trying to find...
What was your favorite PSH film, Josh?
Oh, I don't know. He was incredible in Capote.
Yeah, that was the best.
He was really good in The Talented Mr. Ripley with Matt Damon. He was kind of a side character, and with Jude Law, and I don't know. Just he's one of those guys that you always forget. And growing up, like you almost don't even know his name. But he's in every movie, you know, you always see him in all these movies and you always remember him. He's one of those sidekicks that you always remember. He didn't quite make it to that or in the last few years, I guess you could say, because, you know, he was in Catching Fire. And so he made that, stretch or that move into mainstream films, but he always felt like a little underappreciated by fans, but by actors, he was respected I've ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And that mostly a lot of that comes from his work in theater too. He was a director and he had won a lot of awards for some of the plays he had directed. So it's one of those things where he was 46 and he's got, I think, 3 kids. Said it's just, you always question why they do it, but having known people who've had addictions, it's just something that they can't get rid of. And, you don't know. Just don't know what to do.
Yeah. So rest in peace, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yep.
And not that it particularly matters, but there was some questions about how the Hunger Games is going to deal with this. And they not recasting it, not delaying it. He had a couple scenes left to film, including one quote unquote major scene. But they said they can work around it. So. Nothing's. He'll still be in the movie, which is good. It'll be cool to see him in those final 2 Mockingjay movies.
Yeah, I'm glad because he was good in Catching Fire.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. In more positive news, and in more Aka awesome news, Pitch Perfect 2 has a release date. It's now set for May 15th, 2015, and Elizabeth Banks is going to direct it. She co-starred in the original as one of the tournament commentators, and this is going to be her first time directing a feature film, but there's not much else to say about it. They're still keeping the plot under tight wraps, but at least now we know we're about a year away from the release of Pitch Perfect 2.
She produced the first one as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Didn't she?
Yes.
That's cool.
She's
I'm
talented.
Excited.
I like her.
Yeah,
she's so funny.
She is. And I always wonder, like, how do they, like, how do you pick the songs for this type of movie? Because you want the songs to be relevant a year and a half from now, but you got to plan them out really early. So I always wonder how they do that.
Well, it's going to be things they can get copyright to as well.
I was thinking about this the other day, and I was just like, what if it's like a scandal where they're like, okay, we're going to make these songs popular in 2013, so make this happen. That's how it happens in my head.
That's exactly how it happens.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fearing they're going to do, like a Britney Spears song from her newest album, and it's just going to be lame, because by next year, everybody's going to be over Britney Jean. But they did a good job picking the songs for the first one.
That's a tough film to make.
Yeah.
The ones for the first one were a good mix, though. They weren't all, like, really current songs.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I would think that for this next one, they'll do more music. Just because, like, now they know it's a hit.
Yeah.
So, like, more than when compared to the original. Like, instead of doing 10 songs, they'll do 15. I don't know how many they did in the first one.
Yeah. But the first one had a good balance, though, without it being like, and now we're going to sing for no reason.
Right.
You know, they wrote the songs in well, so I wouldn't like them to overwhelm it just for the sake of having more songs. Although, definitely do like an extended album or something. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, apparently there's still that Christmas album. I thought it was supposed to be out this year. That's what one of the cast members said. But maybe they're saving it for this Christmas now. So, because that'll be 5 months before the sequel. So that would be good timing.
Oh, yeah.
There is a trailer for Seth MacFarlane's second live-action movie. It's called A Million Ways to Die in the West. And what I'm realizing about his movies is that either you're going to love them or you're going to hate them, because he really puts his sense of humor into this movie, his movies. His first one was Ted, that live-action one with the animated teddy bear starring Mark Wahlberg, speaking of him. This one is set in the West in the 1920s, in the 1800s.
Who knows? It's in the West.
And, oh, you thought it was a mess?
No. I said it's in the West.
Oh, in the West. It was Arizona, 1882.
It's a mess, dude. Yeah.
And I was laughing my ass off at this trailer, but I love Seth MacFarlane. So what do you think of it, Josh?
You know what? I loved Ted.
As did I.
So I thought, you know, I was going to really like it, and I didn't dislike it. I think I just don't know what it's going to be like yet. Mm-hmm. I kind of had, it just felt like a few skits placed in a row instead of like a trailer, you know what I mean? And so I'm curious how the movie will actually play out in terms of a story, because right now it's like Liam Neeson's chasing him or wants to have a gunfight with him, and I don't know what the movie's about really. I just know that there's a lot of funny, you know, deaths in it.
It's about all the ways to die in the West.
Oh,
there are a million of them.
It's what the title says.
Yeah.
The clue is in the title. I don't like
will
Seth
there be a million fun. Ways
oh. Yes, that'll they're gonna go through all film. Million There's well, they're so going to go through half a million, film. And then
it's
the
insane.
Sequel, they're going to hit the other.
Oh, yeah. Then they split it into three, is what I heard.
Yeah.
He can do whatever he wants now after Ted. That film rocked the world.
Yeah, I mean, he's so rich from Family Guy. He could.
Yeah, he could make his own movies.
Yeah. They're going to release a book version of the film, actually, before this even hits theaters, which I find interesting.
Oh, God.
That sounds
really?
Even better.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll have to review it. How depressing.
So that's
I like
that.
How
that
Charlize
comes
Theron's
out.
In this.
Yeah, it's got a good cast. Her, Liam Neeson, Neil Patrick Harris.
I bet Neil Patrick Harris would be hilarious in this.
And this is the first time we're going to see Seth MacFarlane on screen. He's always doing voices. He did the voice of Ted, the bear, and he, of course, did the animated voices in Family Guy. So that comes out in May.
He looks weird in this. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because
we
never
seeing
see
him on screen for the first time.
It's just weird.
He's
a very animated face anyway.
Yeah. On the last episode, we talked about Lana Del Rey releasing a cover of the Cinderella song Once Upon a Dream for Maleficent. And now the song is out.
Sleeping Beauty.
I cannot get enough.
Dude, it's so good. And
yeah.
I wouldn't have thought I'd like it, but it was amazing.
I was at Midge's apartment when it came out, and I just kept playing it, and he just looked at me, and I'm like, sorry, bro. I was just like, I love this song.
You love the song or you don't?
I love it. I love.
Oh, I thought you said you hated it. Here, no, let's listen.
I couldn't get enough.
Let's listen to a little bit. So as we were saying, it's a lot darker than what you than the original version in the Cinderella movie.
Sleeping Beauty.
It's so perfect.
Sleeping Beauty. Sorry.
I think your impression last episode was spot on, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you. What's up?
Can you record a cover of Lana Del Rey's cover?
Yeah. I actually think I could do a good version of that.
I think you'd be amazing.
Just got to get the key right. It's a little off right
now. Somehow it made Angelie even spookier in this film.
Oh, I know. Yeah. The trailer that they made cut to this song was fantastic.
Yeah. They just nailed it.
And the timing of this was great. They released this trailer with the new song on during the Grammys.
Grammys, yeah.
And you could get the song for free on Google Play. Let me look. Is it still free?
I still don't know what this movie is about. Is that just
me? It's about Angelina Jolie.
Yeah. I mean, it's about Angelina Jolie being awesome, but like, I don't really know what the take on Sleeping Beauty is.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah. Well,
I don't really care. I'll go and see it anyway.
What's cool is that they have shots exactly from the cartoon adaptation that they've made into real life. So that's awesome. Like, exact shot for shot.
When she laughs at the end, it's like, God, she's crazy.
The synopsis says
bringing back her old crazy Angelina.
The synopsis says Maleficent rises to be the land's fiercest protector, but she ultimately suffers a ruthless betrayal, an act that begins to turn her pure heart to stone. Bent on revenge, Maleficent faces an epic battle with the invading king's successor, and as a result places a curse upon his newborn infant, Aurora. As the child grows, Maleficent realizes that Aurora holds the key to peace in the kingdom and perhaps to Maleficent's true happiness as well.
Oh, that's good. Unfortunately, that's not shown in any of the trailers.
Yeah. Well, you do see Aurora in a couple of the scenes, but yeah, I don't know if this is explained.
We see her.
They need a Divergent style trailer.
Yeah, they do.
Voiceover.
So yeah, with a voiceover reading the synopsis. Yeah.
The song is no longer free on Google Play. It's now $1.29. So if you didn't get it when it was free, you missed out. Jumping to TV news now, Sherlock is finished. Mwah.
Hmm.
Went by so quick.
Ooh.
For now. Season 4 may debut at the end of this year. We'll see. We won't know until they start filming. But Stephen Moffat yesterday, the creator, was doing a Q&A at an Apple store in England, and he revealed that during the Sign of Three episode, you see the sequence when Sherlock and Watson are drinking, there was a scene where they go into a gay bar, and it was cut.
How dare they?
This better be on the DVD.
Damn you, Moffat.
Right?
Well, according to Moffat, it's not going to be on the DVD.
Yeah, well, no one listens to that guy. He just makes stuff up all the time.
Stephen Moffat does not like to include stuff that he's cut out from stuff on DVDs. He's like, he hates including deleted scenes for some reason, and
he's an idiot
for it. Yeah, exactly.
There's quite a few people that do that, though. Like Martin Scorsese, he won't put in extra.
Yeah, but he's Martin Scorsese. Like, he can do it.
There's directors that don't like to put, they always feel that's the cut they wanted you to see. They don't believe in director's cuts and stuff like that.
Yeah, but he's not even the director. Like, that's why I'm like,
it's just a TV show, too. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's not, you know.
Yeah,
stop taking the high road.
TV's a little bit different because, like, in films, if you have a certain way you want it to be seen, then that's it. But you have, like, behind the scenes stuff.
I'm wondering why he even mentioned that there was a gay scene I guess it was Martin Freeman who mentioned it first, because Stephen Moffat didn't bring it up, but now that it's brought up, they have to include it, right? I mean, like, come on.
Maybe. I mean, the DVD's already in the works, so maybe too late.
Oh, dang it.
Martin said, we were absolutely mullered in the gay club. Lots of topless men going past us and us just going, why are we here? I don't know why you
why
wouldn't include
there?
That. That yeah, seems like the perfect thing for the fandom. And this whole season was written to get the fandom excited, so.
Yeah, that's very true.
House of Cards has been renewed for season 3.
Woo! Yay! I'm so excited.
This is just 9 days before season 2 premieres. It's premiering on Valentine's Day. So get your chocolate and your loved one and watch Frank Underwood murder puppies.
Yeah. Re-sign up for Netflix.
Because it's so romantic.
Yeah. There's been a couple of trade publications who have been able to review season 2 so far, by the way, and they say it's really good, like on par with season 1, so that's good.
Wow, I'm so excited. I like that Kyle's on the House of Cards bandwagon now.
Yeah, I am. It's
going to be good.
But we weren't sure that season 3 was going to happen because the executive producer last October hinted that it may not happen because Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright are interested in film careers as well, and TV takes up a lot of time. But as it turns out, season 3 is a go, and hopefully season 4 will be as well.
Well, I think they film these differently too than normal TV shows, so it's like you don't have as rigorous of a schedule. Or actually, they may work a little bit harder, and then you have time off.
Yeah, maybe like half the year that they film, and
it's not like where you're there every day for 8 months or something.
I'm still kind of mad at her. I think her name is Robin Wright plays his wife, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm still mad at her for taking away the Emmy or the Golden Globe from Tatiana Maslany. I just won't forgive that.
Or Orphan Black.
Yeah.
In other Netflix news, Laura Prepon will be in most of Orange is the New Black season 2. That's the that is the word of the creator. There were reports, reliable reports, that said at first she was only going to be in one episode, and then it was 4 episodes, and now it's most of. But who knows what most of actually means. 4 does not sound like most of season 2 when there's 13 episodes. But my guess is maybe her appearances are going to be spread out across all of season 2, and she will appear less than the other characters. I don't know. It's very confusing.
I'm watching it right now, actually, for the first time. So
it's really
I'm
good.
Loving her in it. Yeah.
Yeah. The problem was that she had committed to other stuff after filming Orange is the New Black. And then, of course, the show became really popular and her character became really popular as well. So everybody wants her back. Very dramatic. What else TV news? Well, that's about it, actually. There wasn't too much TV news worth discussing. This weekend coming up, February 7th, Monuments Men opens up. I know we talked about that last episode. The Lego Movie, which we talked about today. And Vampire Academy.
I have to say, Vampire Academy actually looks kind of good. Like, it looks comedic and kind of like in a fun sort of knockoff vampire way. I haven't read the books.
The last trailer was pretty decent.
Really?
Yeah, it came out like, remember I wrote about it?
Yeah. It like... Hearing you say this is shocking.
Well, I'm just saying it, compared to the other ones, it looked...
Okay.
Are we having like the weirdest people cover that? Didn't Richard go to like the set of the Vampire Academy?
It just randomly.
I think I'm going to skip this one, but Josh and Kyle, you guys have a good time.
Okay.
I'll see you there.
Mirama and I will be getting ready for House of Cards.
Woohoo! Yeah.
That's what I'll be doing.
Valentine's Day date? Yeah.
I bought like my whole family House of Cards Blu-rays for Christmas.
Oh, good.
Nice.
Because they won't get Netflix. I'm like, just watch it then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. No matter whose house you're at, you can always watch House of Cards.
Pop it in.
I'm actually rewatching it right now. It's fun because it's been about a year.
Well, I watched it all in one day. So,
I watched it in a weekend.
Wow.
I might do a rewatch before season 2 comes out.
Yeah, you should. I mean, I've been like, oh, yeah, that happens. This happens.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be like that. when it, because I just rushed through them.
Kyle, give us an update on battleships. What's happening there?
Well, today we have our first sudden death match, which is the weirdest thing because it's between Big Bang Theory and Merlin. So I'm like, okay, whatever, guys. So sudden death, this match is only going to last about like 6 hours long to see which fandom can get more votes. And then we move on to the next round, which is going to be Castle and Bones. So
I see. So their comp, this Big Bang versus Merlin came down to 51% versus 49%.
Yeah, which is, yeah, pretty, it's the closest one we've had so far, so.
That's good. I'm glad it was a heated competition.
I'm excited to see how Vampire Diaries goes against Teen Wolf, because that's going to be awesome.
And we have some comments here from last week's episode. I'm trying to get the comments more involved. We got some good ones for episode 22. Somebody commented, just a comment on the thing about Hazel not using her canula in some stills, and I think I know why. I've actually read the first draft of the script. Yeah, lucky me. Show off. And in that, it starts off with this short film of a perfect love story with healthy teenagers, and then Hazel has a voiceover saying that's not how it is, and then the real story comes in. Now, she wrote this in the comments before the trailer was out, so she does actually seem like, oh, but maybe it leaked by that point, so.
No, I think this was before the trailer leaked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, that's interesting, because I was wondering how that little voiceover would work in. I thought she did that just for the trailer.
That's a cool idea. I like that.
Mm-hmm. I wonder who stars in it.
What, in the film?
Yeah, like the perfect love story. With healthy teenagers?
It's the two of them.
It's them.
Oh, it's the same version of them?
Well, it's like them if their life was perfect. Yeah, it's the same thing that's in the trailer.
How it would be like, oh, this was what our life would be like if it was amazing.
The stills of Hazel without the cannulas are like them in Amsterdam.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It'll be an abridged version of what actually happened, mm-hmm, but without all the cancer things. And then it'll be like, jokes, because we're sick, that's not how it went down, and then it will have their actual film.
This is all wrong. They should use Harry and Hermione for the perfect love story.
They can just use that bit of them making out and just put it right at the start.
Right. Karen wrote in, Anthony Hopkins won the Best Actor Oscar for Silence of the Lambs, for which he appeared on screen for 16 minutes, but his presence was felt throughout. I think part of the award nomination is how much of a presence the actor makes. How much do you remember the day after seeing a film? She was writing in regards to American Hustle and their awards potential. Of the leads in American Hustle, who leaves the longest lasting impression? For me, it is Jennifer.
I think this was because we said, or maybe I said, that Jennifer was only in the film for a few minutes.
Yeah.
But we also said that they don't deserve any Academy Awards. Like, it's a good film, but Academy Awards.
I think they deserve awards, but I just thought Jennifer, I'm not on the Jennifer train anymore. I've jumped off.
What?
Bad comments. News. Comments next week. Let me know.
Kevin also wrote in about American Hustle's award potential. Just because you don't like American Hustle doesn't mean it's a great film to others. I thought it was fantastic, and Jennifer Lawrence deserves to be nominated. She was brilliant. Also, she's nominated for it in a supporting role, so that's why she's nominated for it, but barely in the film. I think it definitely deserves to be nominated. Also, Harvey Weinstein has nothing to do with Hustle. He didn't even make the film. Well, his money's behind it, right?
I don't think so. I looked this up.
It's not from Weinstein?
When you said it, I thought he had, but when I looked it up, I couldn't find anything about it.
What? But what's the studio?
I think we were thinking that because Jennifer Lawrence thanked him the year before, whenever she was getting her Oscar for Silver Linings.
Yeah. I'm trying to look this up.
When I looked it up, I couldn't find anything.
Oh, yeah, I don't see why. Okay, yeah, I stand corrected. That's weird. Same director, same cast. I thought Weinstein was still in bed with them.
But about David Russell. She's in a supporting role. Jonah Hill was a supporting role in The Wolf of Wall Street. That's a supporting role where the character is a sidekick or a partner in crime to the main character. I don't feel like Jennifer Lawrence was a sidekick to almost anything. She was just in it for like five scenes. I mean, maybe five scenes. Mm. So I know that there's no set limit, as someone said. You don't have to be in the film for even a scene to get nominated. I just think it's, a ploy to get people to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I love the movie and I love Jennifer Lawrence, but her character was like not integral to the story.
I feel like there needs to be a set limit. You have to be in the movie more than 5 minutes or you don't get nominated.
So thank you to everybody who left comments, and feel free to hit the post announcing this episode. Leave some feedback today about what we had to say, maybe about Ron Hermione, Harry Hermione, Fault in Our Stars trailer, Divergent, Philip Seymour Hoffman, all these things. Visit Hypeable.com for all the news as well concerning these fandoms, but you already know to do that. And actually, I have a request. This just popped in my head. Please go into the iTunes store and rate us. If you click on the link that takes you to the iTunes store in the post, you can then go to the podcast in the iTunes store and leave a little review. We would appreciate that.
We would love that.
We haven't been asking, and we only have 4 written reviews. We have plenty of star reviews, which is great. But if you could write a review of the show, you know, you could say that you hate me. It's okay.
Do it so Merrima can see it.
Oh wait, there is one here. That's from last year. Oh, this is funny. It just says, always a fan of anything Andrew Sims does. So Andrew, you should learn to be a bit more subtle when you're writing reviews about your own shows.
Wait, that's the Australian store?
Yeah, that's in the Australian store.
I flew to Australia just to write that.
I'm pretty sure you can change it in your iTunes settings.
Yeah, but he flew all the way there, so.
Yeah, I flew all the way there for nothing. All right, thank you everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time for episode 24. 24. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Josh Neely.
I'm Tarik Kyle.
And I'm Marima White.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.